Well, the recent updates on JW.org in the video section are quite remarkable. Today's study, Little Children, it's January 26th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 2014 hours Eastern Standard Time. I was looking at minutes and seconds. It was 1444 seconds, with the minutes being 14, I should say, for 44 seconds. And we're studying now, today, in the Crucible, or the C-Cubed article, Chapter 5, Paragraph 12, the last paragraph of Chapter 5, where in the past we have used facts to test dates. Here we are using our genealogy to purify the details. Archaeologist Yigael Yadin was correct by this yardstick in assigning a destruction by fire to Hazor near 1452 BCE. So that fact appears correct because we know that Joshua was with Israel destroying Jericho and Hazor very much in the vicinity of that year, BCE 1452, in the genealogy. Hatshepsut died before Jericho was taken by Joshua in BCE 1452, and her writing of the Hyksos departure from Egypt is possibly a reference to both the foreign rulers driven out by Amos I and to Israel's exodus of BCE 1493, as both were foreigners and rulers in Egypt before 1493 BCE. How would we say that they were both rulers in Egypt before? Well, we talked about this in our other articles. The two destructions of Hazor align with this dating. That is, the time of the Exodus, and also the time of Joshua and Israel crossing the Jordan. The two destructions of Hazor, therefore, we don't have any problem with them, with the Israelites being the ones who destroyed the city. They who reasoned to destroy the idol gods of Egypt and Canaan. Whilst no nation has ever been known to act in such a way. This is an important point with regard to the idea of destroying the idol gods. Why go to such extreme lengths when these idol gods are meaningless? And most, you know, at least to people of another religion, they have no meaning. But in Jehovah's case, he's a jealous God, and he insists that he be the only one who is worshipped, I should say, by the Israelites. The mummy of Hatshepsut was found in 1903 and has now been identified in 2007 by archaeologist Zahai Hawass of Egypt. He's a very famous Egyptian archaeologist. A grave at Jericho revealed a solitary memento of our king of Egypt, a.k.a. Hatshepsut, foremost of noble ladies. That's the end of Chapter 5. Feels like a rather moving ending. I'm touched by it. Even as I recall a considerable amount of work I did on that article. We're not finished with our article yet. We're going to be beginning Chapter 6, hopefully tomorrow. Now, our proverb for today, little children, is from Proverbs chapter 14, verse 9. Foolish are those who make a derision of guilt, but among the upright ones there is agreement. In other words, we're not out to try to make people feel guilty. That's a very fundamental idea, that that's not our goal. And we're interested in what others think, and we're interested in trying to find those with whom we agree on some point or other. I think that's a good way to put it. We don't have to agree on everything either in order to have a useful interchange and to have a significant feeling of unity. I'll talk more about the videos tomorrow, but we have a lot of reading today. 2 Kings chapter 10. Now, Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria. Therefore, Jehu wrote letters and sent them to Samaria to the princes of Jezreel, the older men and the caretakers of Ahab, saying, "Now then, at the very time that this letter comes to you, there are with you the sons of your lord, and there are with you the war chariots and the horses and the fortified city and the armor. And you must see which is the best and most upright of the sons of your lord, and put him upon the throne of his father, the throne of his father. Then fight for the house of your lord." And they became very greatly afraid and began to say, "Look, two kings themselves did not stand before him." Jehu had just killed Jehoram, the king of Israel, and Ahaziah, the king of Judah. "And how shall we ourselves stand? Consequently, the one who is over the house and the one who is over the city and the older men and the caretakers sent to Jehu, saying, 'We are your servants, and everything that you say to us we shall do. We shall not make anyone king. What is good in your own eyes, do.' At that he wrote them a second letter, saying, 'If you belong to me and it is my voice that you are obeying, take the heads of the men that are sons of your lord and come to me tomorrow at this time at Jezreel.' Now the sons of the king, 70 men who were with, they were with the distinguished men of the city that were bringing them up." In other words, raising these young sons. "And it came about that as soon as the letter came to them, they went taking the sons of the king and slaughtering them, 70 men, after which they put their heads in baskets and sent them to him at Jezreel. Then the messenger came in and told him, saying, 'They have brought the heads of the sons of the king.' So he said, 'Put them in two heaps at the entrance of the gate until morning.' And it came about in the morning that he proceeded to go out. Then he stood still and said to all the people, 'You are righteous. Here I myself conspired against my lord, and I got to kill him, but who struck down all these? Know then that nothing of Jehovah's word will fall unfulfilled to the earth that Jehovah has spoken against the house of Ahab. And Jehovah himself has done what he spoke by means of his servant Elijah. Moreover, Jehu went on to strike down all who were left over of the house of Ahab in Jezreel, and all his distinguished men and his acquaintances and his priests, until he had let no survivor of his remain. And he proceeded to rise and come in, then get on his way to Samaria. The binding house of the shepherds was on the way. And Jehu himself encountered the brothers of Ahaziah, the king of Judah. When he said to them, 'Who are you?' Then they said, 'We are the brothers of Ahaziah, and we are on our way down to ask if all is well with the sons of the king and the sons of the lady.' Immediately he said, 'Seize them alive, you men.' So they seized them alive and slaughtered them at the cistern of the binding house, 42 men. And he did not let a single one of them remain. As he was going along from there, he got to encounter Jehonadab, the son of Rechab, coming to meet him. When he blessed him, he accordingly said to him, 'Is your heart upright with me, just as my own heart is with your heart?' To this Jehonadab said, 'It is. If it is, do give me your hand.' So he gave him his hand. At that, he made him get up into the chariot with him. Then he said, 'Do go along with me and look upon my toleration of no rivalry toward Jehovah.' And they kept him riding with him in his war chariot. Finally, he came to Samaria. Now he went striking down all who were left over of Ahab's in Samaria, until he had annihilated them according to Jehovah's word that he had spoken to Elijah." I will certainly cut off from Ahab, 1 Kings 21:21. Anyone urinating against a wall and the helpless and worthless one in Israel, a clean sweep after you, he said, and cut off from Ahab. Further, Jehu collected all the people together and said to them, Ahab on the one hand worshipped Baal a little, Jehu on the other hand will worship him a great deal. He was deceiving them, of course. So now call all the prophets of Baal, all his worshippers and all his priests to me. Do not let a single one be missing, because I have a great sacrifice for Baal. Anyone that is missing will not keep living. As for Jehu, he acted slyly for the purpose of destroying the worshippers of Baal. And Jehu went on to say, sanctify a solemn assembly for Baal. Accordingly, they proclaimed it. After that, Jehu sent through all Israel so that all the worshippers of Baal came in, and not a single one was left over that did not come in. And they kept coming into the house of Baal, and the house of Baal came to be full from end to end. He now said to the one who was over the wardrobe, bring out garments for all the worshippers of Baal. So he brought the attire out for them. Then Jehu entered with Jehonadab, the son of Rechab, into the house of Baal. He now said to the worshippers of Baal, search carefully and see that there may be here with you none of the worshippers of Jehovah, but only the worshippers of Baal. Finally, they came in to render up sacrifices and burnt offerings, and Jehu himself stationed 80 men outside at his disposal and went on to say, as for the man that escapes from the men whom I am bringing into your hands, the one soul will go for the other's soul. And it came about that as soon as he finished rendering up the burnt offering, Jehu immediately said to the runners and the adjutants, come in, strike them down. Do not let a single one go out. And the runners and the adjutants began to strike them down with the edge of the sword and to throw them out. And they kept going as far as the city of the house of Baal. Then they brought out the sacred pillars of the house of Baal and burned each one. Further, they pulled down the sacred pillar of Baal and pulled down the house of Baal. And they kept it set aside for privies down to this day. Thus Jehu annihilated Baal out of Israel. It was only the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, with which he caused Israel to sin, that Jehu did not turn aside from following them, that is, the golden calves, of which one was in Bethel and the other in Dan. Consequently, Jehovah said to Jehu, for the reason that you have acted well in doing what is right in my eyes, and according to all that was in my heart you have done to the house of Ahab, sons themselves to the fourth generation will sit for you upon the throne of Israel. And Jehu himself did not take care to walk in the law of Jehovah, the God of Israel, with all his heart. He did not turn aside from the sins of Jeroboam, with which he caused Israel to sin. In those days, Jehovah started to cut off Israel piece by piece, and Hazael kept striking them in all the territory of Israel, from the Jordan toward the rising of the sun, all the land of Gilead, the Gadites and the Reubenites and the Manassites, from Aroer, which is by the torrent valley of Arnon, even Gilead and Bashan. And the rest of the affairs of Jehu and all that he did and all his mightiness, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel? Finally, Jehu lay down with his forefathers, and they buried him in Samaria, and Jehoahaz his son began to reign in place of him. And the days that Jehu had reigned over Israel were 28 years in Samaria. So he reigned for a good stretch of time, didn't he? And this is Elijah who said he was bringing calamity. Jehovah was going to bring calamity. It's interesting, he said, in the eyes of Jehovah, he said, you've sold yourself to do what is bad. And then he said, here I am bringing calamity upon you. He didn't say Jehovah was bringing calamity, which is interesting. He did not use that specific language, although this is, of course, a transcription of what he said as recorded in writing, which may, of course, slightly differ from what he actually said, possibly. Let's go to his, little children, let's go to a reading in Ezekiel now. Ezekiel chapter 34. Now, this is a different sort of chapter from the other chapters that we've been reading. Although the last chapter we saw, there was some discussion about the judgment against Israel, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, Clark mentions that about Ezekiel 33, that he's Jehovah's turning his attention to the Israelites in the prophecy. And he continues here in chapter 34 talking about the Israelites. And in this case, he's judging the shepherds of Israel. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy. And you must say to them, to the shepherds, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Woe to the shepherds of Israel, who have become feeders of themselves. Is it not the flock that the shepherds ought to feed? The fat is what you eat, and with the wool you clothe your own selves. The plump animal is what you slaughter. The flock itself you do not feed. The sickened ones you have not strengthened, and the ailing one you have not healed, and the broken one you have not bandaged, and the dispersed one you have not brought back, and the lost one you have not sought to find. But with harshness you have had them in subjection, even with tyranny. And they were gradually scattered because of there being no shepherd, so that they became food for every wild beast of the field, and they continued to be scattered. My sheep kept straying on all the mountains and on every high hill, and on all the surface of the earth my sheep were scattered, with no one making a search, and with no one seeking to find. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of Jehovah. As I am alive, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. Surely, for the reason that my sheep became something for plunder, and my sheep continued to be food for every wild beast of the field, because there was no shepherd, and my shepherds did not search for my sheep, but the shepherds kept feeding themselves, and my own sheep they did not feed. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of Jehovah. This is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Here I am against the shepherds, and I shall certainly ask back my sheep from their hand and make them cease from feeding my sheep. And the shepherds will no longer feed themselves, and I will deliver my sheep out of their mouth, and they will not become food for them. For this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Here I am, I myself, and I will search for my sheep and care for them, according to the care of one feeding his drove in the day of his coming to be in the midst of his sheep that have been spread abroad. That is the way that I shall care for my sheep, and I will deliver them out of all the places to which they have been scattered in the day of clouds and thick gloom. And I will bring them out from the peoples and collect them together from the lands, and bring them in onto their soil and feed them on the mountains of Israel, by the stream beds and by all the dwelling places of the land. In a good pasturage I shall feed them, and on Israel's high mountains their abiding place will come to be. There they will lie down in a good abiding place, and on a fat pasturage they will feed upon the mountains of Israel. I myself shall feed my sheep, and I myself shall make them lie down, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. The lost one I shall search for, and the dispersed one I shall bring back, and the broken one I shall bandage, and the ailing one I shall strengthen, but the fat one and the strong one I shall annihilate. I shall feed that one with judgment. And as for you, my sheep, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Here I am judging between a sheep and a sheep, between the rams and the he-goats. Is it such a little thing for you men that on the very best pasturage you feed, but the rest of your pasturages you should trample down with your feet, and that the clear waters you drink, but the ones left over by you, But the ones left over you should foul by stamping with your feet? And as for my sheep, on the pasture ground trampled by your feet should they feed, and the water befouled by the stamping of your feet should they drink? Therefore this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said to them. Here I am, I myself, and I shall certainly judge between a plump sheep and a lean sheep. for the reason that with flank and with shoulder you kept pushing, and with your horns you kept shoving all the sickened ones until you had scattered them to the outside. And I will save my sheep, and they will no longer become something for plunder. And I will judge between a sheep and a sheep, and I will raise up over them one shepherd, and he must feed them, even my servant David. He himself will feed them, and he himself will become their shepherd, and I myself, Jehovah, will become their God, and my servant David a chieftain in the midst of them. I myself, Jehovah, have spoken, and I will conclude with them a covenant of peace. This is here. Notice again, it's like the new covenant that which was we read about in the book of Jeremiah. Chapter 31, was it not? And I shall certainly cause the injurious wild beasts to cease out of the land, and they will actually dwell in the wilderness in security and sleep in the forests. And I will make them and the surroundings of my hill a blessing, and I will cause the pouring rain to descend in its time. Pouring rains of blessing there will prove to be, and the tree of the field must give its fruitage, and the land itself will give its yield, and they will actually prove to be on their soil in security. And they will have to know that I am Jehovah when I break the bars of their yoke, and I have delivered them out of the hand of those who had been using them as slaves. And they will no longer become something to plunder for the nations. And as regards the wild beast of the earth, it will not devour them, and they will actually dwell in security with no one to make them tremble. And I will raise up for them a planting for a name, and they will no more become those taken away by famine in the land. And they will no longer bear the humiliation by the nations. And they will have to know that I, Jehovah their God, am with them, and that they are my people. The house of Israel is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. And as regards you, my sheep, the sheep of my pasturing, you are earthling men. I am your God, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. That's the end of Ezekiel 34. So the idea of the illustration of the sheep wasn't brought out till the very end of the chapter. When he talks about the sheep, he's not talking about sheep. He's talking about people, humans. And the sheep is just an illustration. The idea of a sheep as a man is just an illustration, of course. And the shepherds are also, of course, humans, and they are those who should be looking after the human people who are in the congregation of Jehovah's people. Okay, now we need to go and try and do our final reading. Do we have time? We have some time. John, I would like to read. I'm glad that Brother Sarenko brought up the book of John in his talk, because I've been wanting to choose this particular chapter for today. John chapter 1, little children. In the beginning the Word was, and the Word was with God, and the Word was a God. This one was in the beginning with God. Now, before we go too far, I want to say we don't have to finish this chapter today. This one was in the beginning with God. All things came into existence through him, and apart from him, not even one thing came into existence. What has come into existence by means of him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light was shining, is shining, in the darkness, but the darkness has not overpowered it. There arose a man that was sent forth as a representative of God. His name was John. This man came for a witness, a different John, of course, from the author, who was also named John. And the John who came in order to bear witness about the light, that people of all sorts might believe through him. He was not that light, but he was meant to bear witness about that light. The true light that gives light to every sort of man was about to come into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into existence through him. But the world did not know him. He came to his own home, but his own people did not take him in. However, as many as did receive him, to them he gave authority to become God's children, because they were exercising faith in his name. And they were born not from blood, or from a fleshly will, or from man's will, but from God. So the Word became flesh and resided among us, and we had a view of his glory, a glory such as belongs to an only begotten Son from a Father, and he was full of undeserved kindness and truth. John bore witness about him, John the Baptizer. Yes, he actually cried out. This was the one who said it, saying, "The one coming behind me has advanced in front of me, because he existed before me." And then the author of the book continues, "For we all received from out of his fullness," even that is the fullness of the Christ, "even undeserved kindness upon undeserved kindness, because the law was given through Moses, the undeserved kindness and the truth came to be through Jesus Christ. No man has seen God at any time. The only begotten God, who is in the bosom position with the Father, is the one that has explained him." Now this is the witness of John the Baptizer, when the Jews sent forth priests and Levites from Jerusalem to him to ask him, "Who are you?" And he confessed and did not deny, but confessed, "I'm not the Christ." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" And he said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" And he answered, "No." Therefore they said to him, "Who are you, that we may give an answer to those who sent us? What do you say about yourself?" He said, "I am a voice of someone crying out in the wilderness, 'Make the way of Jehovah straight,' just as Isaiah the prophet said." Now, those sent forth were from the Pharisees. So they questioned him and said to him, "Why then do you baptize, if you yourself are not the Christ, or Elijah, or the prophet?" John answered them, saying, "I baptize in water. In the midst of you, one is standing whom you do not know, the one coming behind me, but the lace of whose sandal I am not worthy to untie." These things took place in Bethany across the Jordan, where John was baptizing. I'd like to say a few words, though, about something else and see whether we can read some more of this if we have time. If you have been suffering with a cough or sneezing or congestion or any of these symptoms that we typically associate with a cold or the flu, or any of those types of infections, the strep throat, anything that we could categorize as a viral or a bacterial infection, then you may want to consider the use of vitamin C in a quantity which would be greater than normally consumed by most people, which would be something like 2 grams of vitamin C, or 2,000 milligrams every 20 minutes. Now, even young children at the age of 4 years old could take that much vitamin C without problem. They might, just as everyone else would, reach a point where their bowels wouldn't tolerate the vitamin C and they would have a bowel movement, and that would be the end of the disease at that point. If the child is younger than 4 years, then the amount could be reduced. The amount of vitamin C can be reduced in terms of how much. The quantity can be reduced according to the weight of the child. So compare with a four-year-old's weight and then reduce accordingly would be the way you could do that. But it's not really a critical factor exactly how much, but it needs to be sufficient amount. Sufficient amount every 20 minutes until the bowels move. When the bowels move, you have beaten the disease. The illness will be gone. The infection will be gone. Vitamin C eliminates the free radicals that are produced, or the cytokine chain, or whatever's being caused by the infection, all the reactions in the body that also feed, particularly the ones that feed the infection, those are eliminated by vitamin C and the infection dies. So that's why it's so useful. But vitamin C does more than that. It also boosts the immune system. So another thing that you may wish to consider if you do ever have a cold or a flu is that you can take vitamin C on a daily basis. And I take, personally, at the moment, 8 grams every single day, spaced out throughout the day. And I'm taking a slow-release form of vitamin C. But when you're sick, you should probably take a fast-release form, which is ascorbate. And I have several, well, maybe a few pounds of it in the fridge, or many, you know, hundreds of grams, anyway, of ascorbate powder in the fridge, which I drink with a liquid, and that is the fast-release form of vitamin C. Vitamin C can also be taken intravenously, and this is very effective in the case of infections which don't respond at all to anything, which are exceedingly rare. But, I mean, orally taken, if they don't respond to anything that's taken orally, such as the vitamin C I've been talking about, then intravenous vitamin C administered by a qualified physician would be very probably much more effective and could solve the problem very quickly. And this applies to everything, including COVID and every other type of infection. All infections are greatly benefited by vitamin C, and in most cases, oral administration is all that's needed. All you need to do is swallow the vitamin C in either a powder mixed with a liquid, and probably you want to keep the liquid simple, just water and sugar with the vitamin C powder would be probably the way to go, just to keep it simple in terms of, you know, adding more things to your stomach. But you could certainly, if your stomach needs something to soothe it down, you know, to soothe irritation, you can use something like milk, which the stomach usually benefits from. It's usually a way to calm the stomach. Okay. But vitamin C, consider it, because it can change your life immensely to be free of all these infections. You'll never have a cold again, ever, if you, first of all, if you take a vitamin C daily in sufficient amounts, and you will never have a cold that becomes full-blown if you take vitamin C in the fast-release form immediately upon seeing the first symptoms. That's all for today's study, little ones. It's Friday, January 26th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 20:47 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you. On my behalf, this is Liv Dusty and Cassie, my digital watch, saying bye for now.